Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together, because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path, ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
We welcome Carissa Andrews, a best-selling indie author and CEO of Author Revolution. Carissa shares her journey of writing over 25 books and empowering authors with financial and innovative strategies in indie publishing. We'll dive into how she uses manifestation, cutting-edge technology, and her expertise to revolutionize the author's journey and indie publishing. Don't miss her inspiring insights and practical tips for harnessing creativity and innovation in writing. Carissa, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sherman. Thanks for having me.
Great. It's great to have you on my podcast. I was a guest on your podcast talking about my book. Now, I want to dig into the whole indie game when it comes to being an author, because it is tough, it's rough. A lot of people take advantage of indie authors with the best-selling strategies and this, is that, and the third. And some of them I heard and I inquired, and I was like, you charge what? It's like, oh my God. So like, blowing my phone up. You're trying to publish a book. We can help you. We can help you do this and do that. And honestly, I just feel like it's overcomplicated. But then they make it overcomplicated. But yeah. I feel like after talking to you, being interviewed on your podcast, it was more so like it's roadblocks in our mind that stop us from actually performing, not the fact that we need all of this help.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, they procrastinate learn. And so they think they don't know as much as they do. And so they're reaching out to other experts a lot of the times when they already know kind of what they need to do or what they should be looking into next, what the next steps should be. Mm-hmm. And then some people just love learning. And so they'll sit in learning without taking action for a very long time. And sometimes that trips them up too. It just depends on the type of person.
Right, right. And what do you see when it comes to you, say a new author joining Indie Revolution? What do you usually see that happens with them?
Oh, it's always mindset. There's always something in their mindset that's tripping them up, whether it be like the poverty mentality, lack mentality, or whether it be like they think that their genre can't earn them something, or they think that maybe there's something that they're missing and they haven't quite figured out what it is yet, or whatever. It's always a mindset part first. So we always try to tackle the mindset, which is why at Author Revolution, we deal with mindset and manifestation on one hand. Then we also have strategy and we have technology on the other hand. I've always been a person that likes to juggle both science fiction and fantasy. Like my books do that. My fiction books do that. My interests do that. And so it just made sense that Author Revolution would also do that, where we are looking at authorship and indie authorship in specific, because I've been doing this for 12 years as an indie author, but then I've been in the publishing industry since I was 14. So it just depends on what authors are really looking for and what they're doing, but we're trying to help them to innovate their own way, because there are so many people that say, this is the only way to do this thing. Mm-hmm. Is it though? And most of the time, you're going to have more success when you're following your own inspiration and your own internal nudges than you are if you're just following someone else's cookie cutter plan or allowing someone else to even do it for you.
Right, right. So. Yeah. And I definitely do see that a lot. And so how did you get into publishing at 14? I don't want to miss that part.
You know. Well, the way all 14-year-olds do, I was a reader first and ended up working at a bookstore.
Okay.
So I was working at a bookstore in my local town. I was very quickly promoted, weirdly enough, at 14. I think I wasn't quite 15 yet when I got promoted to the magazine manager, which was very exciting. Mm-hmm. So I was like the one that was like in charge of this huge magazine spread back in the day when people actually read magazines. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like my first foray into learning what people wanted or understanding how to market to readers or how to explain a book to a reader who I thought they probably would enjoy this particular book. Like I was a reader way back then. That was my first love was always reading. And then from there, I ended up working at another bookstore in a larger town. And then I ended up working for publishing houses and printing houses. I've kind of tap danced around all the things. I was a graphic designer. I did everything except the writing for a very long time. Like I was writing for myself, but I never wanted to be an author. And eventually my best friend was the one that kind of was like, Carissa, though, I don't think you're loving the graphic design thing. Maybe you should try writing. You've always loved writing. Why aren't you writing? And I was just like, No, that's not. I'll blog. I'll blog. You're right. Maybe I'll just write that. And then the next thing I know, I had a series idea pop in my head and haven't looked back since.
Wow. And so you started as a teen writing books.
Yeah.
And so how did that work out for you? And has that been like your career ever since or?
Well, I didn't publish any of this. I say I didn't publish the stuff when I was a teen. So I wrote my first book when I was 14. It was like 200 page. I don't even know, Fear Street wannabe book. And I gave it to my English teacher who, of course, praised it up and down and loved it for being a teenager who actually wrote a book instead of, I don't know, played video games at the time, I suppose. And I thought it was the fantasticest thing ever. That's a word, right? And I gotta say, I look at it now and I'm like, it will never see the light of day. That's a scary book, but it was a good first step. And so I kind of took that book and transitioned it later on through my career. It became like the idea for it came from a dream I had, but it was so vivid. Like even now I can remember the dream. And so I ended up transitioning as I obviously entered the indie space and recreated the story. It now became Secret Legacy, which is the first book in the Windhaven Witches book or Windhaven series. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same book as before in a lot of ways, but a much more mature understanding of story structure and plot and characterization.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
And so it
was just always fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And so, did you make a living off of writing books at the time of your life or how does that go?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I obviously earned a living from my books, but I also earned a living from Author Revolution. So it's always, there's a lot of authors who talk about how they don't run ads or they don't do promo stacking. For me, it was a hard game to get into. Even though I was in that new indie space, even though it was a genre that I considered to be good, urban fantasy, paranormal fantasy, there's a lot of those types of readers out there. But because when I first started, I had just gone through a divorce, I had remarried, we didn't have a lot of money at the time. So I was scrounging money to try to put together promos or put together things. So I was doing a lot of organic outreach and doing a lot of things that way. Mm-hmm. The first series that I wrote ended up becoming an international best-selling series. The Windhaven Witches also became an international best-selling series, and so did the Accidental Alpha series that is currently ongoing. But what's great about it is like when I started treating it like a business, when I started understanding that I have to invest more into my career, I can get more out of it, and readers can find these series faster. That's where things started to expand, and that it was all in my mindset because at the time I was like, but I have to see the return coming to me first before I can invest. And so there were certain aspects that I had to shift around just a little bit in my head so that I had to determine what was it that I was going after and how do I want to get there and then take those steps to align with it so that I could bring it in. And now I'm earning a full-time living wage off my books and off of Author Revolution, but they're like two separately. Like I could drop one and be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's cool. And so did you have any jobs or whatever since or?
Mm-mm. Yeah. So when I went full in with my books, I was freelancing. So I was doing freelance writing. I was doing like blogs. I was doing magazines, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I also did social media management for a couple of people. I actually have two of those clients from way back in my day that I'm still doing social media for. Mm-hmm. Only because I love them, and they're like individual artists as well. I have one guy who's he's a gypsy jazz guitarist, and I love him to pieces. And I think I would give him a heart attack if I left. So I'm still doing his social media, even though I don't need to, and even though I've kind of gone beyond that, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But he's so great that I couldn't leave him high and dry. Maybe at some point I'll pawn it off on my daughter and let her do it. But that was what I was doing in the beginning to try to supplement and bring in enough income so that I could then invest in my author career or invest in whatever. Author Revolution wasn't actually even a thing. Like, I wasn't anticipating teaching, but I was in my local community. I was at a writing group and was trying to decide if I wanted to be a part of the writing group. But someone heard me speaking and they're like, you should do a class here at the library and help authors understand this new indie thing. Mm-hmm. This was probably 2016. And so I was teaching at the library in central Minnesota about how to indie publish. This is the process. This is the way it works. I've already published 5 books at this point. And so I get what's happening here. And it was such a hit that there were a lot of people when they missed a class, if it was snowing or if something weird was going on, they were like, dang it, why did I miss this? And so I was trying to figure out, well, how can I digitize this so that I can then get you that information? But I didn't even, my vision wasn't even as broad as having Author Revolution as it is now. It was literally just, I want to get the course to these people. They weren't kids. They were all ages. And so it was just a matter of trying to figure that out. And once that was locked in place, all of a sudden it was like, I can reach more people with this. This is actually kind of cool. And so then I started working on my digital marketing game, understanding how that process works. And in so many ways, it's so similar to selling books anyway. So it's like they kind of just marry up so nicely that as you're learning one, you're kind of enhancing the other. And so each side would kind of go up and go back and forth.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's like I never, ever found someone that could say they've made a living off of books since they were like a teenager. That's kind of, that's pretty like phenomenal. Usually it's, well, I was down on my luck and then I just wrote a book I've been doing this career for years. But to hear that someone actually wrote a book is an author and dedicated their life to being an author is very, very rare.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, I didn't earn the living starting at 14. Like, that first book at 14 kind of sat around and did nothing for a very long time. I didn't start publishing books until 2013. I wrote my first book where I knew I was going to publish it. That was the goal in 2010. So that's only been the 12 or 13, 14, oh my gosh, 14 years now since I started writing Pandamus. And the first book, though, when I was 14, that was just, I, for whatever reason, I knew how to write it. And so it just kind of sat on the shelf. I was happy that my English teacher liked it. And that was as good as it went. I mean, I continued to write for myself, but it was never with the idea of publishing. I have an aunt who wanted to publish her whole life. She wanted to be an author. And I didn't overly like that particular aunt. She's not one of the most friendly of aunts. And so I didn't want to be anything like her. And so it never occurred to me to actually publish books until much later. So around 2010, 2011 is when I started going, yeah, I could do this, especially in the indie space as it transitioned. I knew I didn't want to go traditional. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to maintain some control over what I was doing and creative license to work on covers, to do whatever. Because I said, I'm a graphic designer as well. And so it's like I wanted to be able to have my hands in everything.
Yeah.
So once the indie space kind of came about, it was better.
And so what's the, what's the biggest transition you've seen from being an author and publishing a book in the 2010, 2013 to where it is now? Because now we have all kind of tools and things to use to help us publish a book. Amazon, KDP, people are publishing books left and right.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the biggest thing I would say is that obviously we have more support now. So when it comes to layout design, we have tools for that. We've got Vellum, we've got Atticus that we can use. Mm-hmm. We've got groups, Facebook groups or other groups. We've got a lot of coaches now in the space who have been doing this a long time. So we have people that we can now turn to and try to help us when we're stuck. Where when I first started, there was nothing. Kindle Select or Kindle Unlimited for the reader side of things, that didn't exist yet. So trying to reach readers who are voracious or who wanted a subscription type model, that was unheard of. Having the option and the ability to run promos and get your books out there in a promo stack or ads, even Facebook ads and Amazon ads and BookBub ads, none of those existed in the beginning. So it was all trying to find what it is that you want. How can you get this information to the readers? How can you get them excited about your books? What genre are you even in? So the genre that I ended up being placed in fully, so it's paranormal and urban fantasy in general. So not romance, it's urban fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
That term didn't even exist yet. So even though it was like kind of existed, everyone was like, it's paranormal romance. No, it's not. It's there for me. It was like, this is it, the story and the plot is all fantasy. It's fantasy in an urban setting. And I have sometimes paranormal stuff where there's ghosts or there's hauntings or there's whatever. And I knew that I wasn't fitting in with the people who had the reader expectation of romance or steamy romance or something like that in those types of books when my books were plot-based. So it wasn't until urban fantasy became a genre that we were like, oh, wow, okay, this is where I'm actually at. Mm-hmm. That didn't exist. And so it's just evolved. And so following along with how that evolution has brought us to where we are now, like with new technologies like AI and ChatGPT or Claude, it's been amazing to see how much we've transitioned and how far we've come from that both beginning days.
Right. And how is AI helpful to a new author, or say authors period, versus how I was back in the day?
Oh yeah. So AI is like my favorite tool. I call it consulting the Oracle, because to me it's like, it's so great when you get stuck. Consult the Oracle. If you need help writing a newsletter, consult the Oracle. If you hate doing social media posts, consult the Oracle. I use ChatGPT for pretty much everything. I have a course on planning your series. If you want to write a book, if you want to write a series, I walk authors through steps on how to prompt ChatGPT to understand your genre, to understand reader expectations, to figure out tropes. No, even if you have a book started, you can figure out what is happening in your story. What are the tropes? What does the story archetype of this look like so far? Like, how can I adjust it to make sure it's fitting reader expectations in the story archetype? So there's a lot of ways that the sky is the limits on how you can use ChatGPT to be able to create content for your books, or even plan your books and write your books if you really wanted to go that far.
Right. And let's say if someone is like, this isn't even real, ChatGPT did this, or did AI write this book, et cetera, right? What would you say to them when it comes to authenticity of what they're reading if AI was involved in it?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest thing is, okay, so as a reader, number one, are your expectations being met? And if they are, what difference does it make? It's a tool that an author is using to be able to write and tell a story for you. But also, ChatGPT is not going to write a perfect story by itself. It's going to need to have some very clear prompts. So that's going to require the prompter, aka the author, to know, what is the story about? What are the characters like? Who are you trying to give this information to? What kind of archetype are you building with the story plot? What is the theme? What is the overall lesson that's going on through here? If you have that information in your head and you feed that into ChatGPT, let's say you do it through a custom GPT, and now it has, you know, all of your characters, it knows the Enneagram type of each character, it knows like all the information, like if you fill out a character sheet or have it create a character sheet. I mean, if you really hate creating characters, then by all means, have ChatGPT create a character for you. But then you refeed it back into chat and it understands all the information about your characters, your plot, where you're going with it, the outline, the goals of all the things, that you can create a chapter by chapter synopsis so it keeps you and chat on track. And so then you go in and just create a chapter at a time, almost like you're writing the book, right? And so you can be like, okay, chat, this is what we're doing right now. This is how we're going to write this particular scene. Go back through the outline that we're going to be working on, understand the characters, and let's start writing chapter one. Mm-hmm. And what can happen is it'll start writing and you can read it and go, this is a rom-com. It needs to be funnier. Let's try again. Like you reprompt it. It's not the first time around. It's never going to be perfect. And then you're going to take chunks of it and go, yeah, I like that. That actually worked really well. But then you're going to add your own voice to it. You're going to add your own mix, or you're going to reprompt it again, because your first round of getting any information out of ChatGPT for a chapter or a part of the chapter is not going to be good. It's not going to be perfect. You're going to have to keep reworking it and keep training it so that it understands what you're going for. But at a certain point, once you've been doing it for a while, it learns. It understands what you're trying to aim for, and it keeps and maintains your voice. It keeps and maintains the type of characters that you're trying to work with. If you wanted to go that route, like I've tested it and I played around with the concept of, can you write a book as an author well with ChatGPT or with Claude? And you can. You absolutely can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to require you still, as an author, knowing what you're trying to, knowing what the story is you're trying to tell, and maintaining the the world in your head well enough so that you understand the characters and what they're trying to do and all of the things. Otherwise, it'll fall apart. It just won't read well.
Right. And so what is the biggest difference between Claude and ChatGPT? Why do you use both of them?
I've only played with Claude a couple of times, and I want to be able to work with it more because the memory space that Claude has is much bigger. So the context window is like 200,000 characters that it can maintain at any one given time about your story or about your world or whatever. So creating a custom GPT kind of helps because you can put a lot of information into the back end of your custom GPT, and you can prompt it to be like, go back through all of the chapters we've already written so that you remember the flow of this story and the characters and all the things. And then we're going to start working on the next chapter. But if you are in a chat window with Claude, there's a lot of information that you don't have to reprompt because ChatGPT's context window is like 86,000 characters. It's a lot smaller. It's less than half of what Claude can do. So it just depends on what you're trying to do. But I find that ChatGPT is my go-to because I'm using it all the time for social media. I'm using it for newsletters. I'm using it for quickly answering a question that I'm wondering about when it comes to a plot device or how would a character respond in this scenario that is an Enneagram 8, or like I'm asking it questions all the time, and then also using DALL-E, which is part of ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And that's the image creator. And so it just makes more sense for me to stay within that program, but not because Claude's not as good, because it is. It's really fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And I actually also heard people using all kind of different AIs, and different ones have different strengths. Like Gemini is one of them that I was talked to about, and it was just like, yeah, Gemini is good. And I tried it, and I was like, oh, wow, I really like it, you know?
Yeah.
And they all have their strengths, and they all have their weaknesses. DALL-E for sure has its weaknesses.
I also like Adobe Firefly, though. Adobe Firefly is great, and I had that already because I'm a graphic designer, so I have obviously Adobe CC. So to me, it's just part of the package. I'm like, let's try it.
Right.
And that one's cool. I've played with Midjourney. Midjourney's cool. It does require a bit more technical expertise, but you can get some great stuff coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
that's really cool. And so besides AI and things like that, what kind of manifestation techniques do you use when it comes to authors?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I work with authors on, because this is the thing that has been over and over repeatedly coming up, is that poverty mindset. And so I have a lot of courses when it comes to manifestation on getting the mindset clear on money, because the money stuff hangs them up. Like they get tripped over, like, why aren't my royalties the way that they are, or the way that I want them to be? Why can't I seem to get out of my own way when it comes to doing XYZ or hitting reader expectations so that I can pull in more money or any of the things? So I have like a masterclass called the Abundant Author Activator. Mm-hmm. And that helps them to activate that mindset and reduce or limit the poverty mentality. So we have in all of those like manifestation courses or masterclasses that I have, my friend and board certified clinical hypnotherapist, Tammy Tyree, is a part of the program. So I do meditations, like guided meditations that go along with all of the programs. And then she does clinical hypnotherapy on everyone as well. So it's not just meditation. It's not just woo. It's actual like subconscious work as well that we dive into. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a proponent and lover of understanding how our subconscious mind, how our minds work in general. Mm-hmm. So when we're working with authors, we're working with them to reframe their limiting beliefs, to reframe what they get to have, to reframe how they're writing, how they're receiving, how they get to stay in a particular genre if that feels good to them, even though part of them is telling them they have to go into romance, whatever it is. Like there's always something that they're trying to overcome so that they can be successful with what they're doing and what they love. And so we're working with them on so many different levels, doing so many different things. And so we've got Abundant Author Alignment. We've got the Millionaire Author Challenge. We've got the Millionaire Author Big Manifestation Course. We have the Your Future Self membership, which is all, do you know Beachbody? You seem like a guy that would at least know what Beachbody is, right?
Sure, I know, but...
yeah, right. Yeah. So you have these little programs. You could be like Obsession or 8-week, whatever. The concept that Tammy and I came up with was that authors, especially when they're going through the programs, they stay on track. They do the meditations, they do the hypnosis, they're loving it. Their vibe's shifting. They're starting to get their mindset into the right place. Mm-hmm. But then the course ends and they're like, I don't know which ones to do anymore because it was laid out by the weeks. Here are the meditations for this week. Mm-hmm. And so what we ended up doing was coming up with like mind magic workouts where there's a theme for the month. It could be money. It could be reaching your higher potential. It could be NaNoWriMo. It could be like, oh, whatever it is. So we've got, I think there's nine programs now where they come in, they could pick one, and there's always one that's new. Like each month we're creating a new one as of right now. And then they can just follow along. Like you start with day one of month one in week one and just go through them. And then you know every day which meditation or hypnosis you're supposed to do that's connecting to the theme of that particular workout. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so So then they don't have to worry about like which one is going to keep them in the right vibe. They can just go along and trust that this is the right one for you today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That sounds really cool. Really cool. And so when it comes to, say, innovation, and I know that all boils down to each individual person and their creativity and things like that. And so say for someone like me that's in self-help, and I'm like, I have this book. I'm going to start this idea. I just don't know where to start. How will you help someone innovate and come up with a strategy to go ahead and write that book, promote it, get it out, especially make a living off of that?
Yeah. So the first thing that I typically will do is have them sit down and brainstorm. So even it doesn't matter what you're writing. Like when you're trying to figure out what to write in the first place, mm-hmm. I always have them start with their genre. What is the genre? Circle it on a piece of paper. Put it on scalpel, whatever. And then you're going to start spoking off from it. What is it about that particular genre that excites you? Let's say it's urban fantasy. It's psychics. It's witches. It's shifters. It's mystery stuff. It's uncovering things. It's found families. It's so then you start branching out from there. And then it's okay, from witches. What kind of witches? Necromancers. Yeah, I like that. So you're doing that snowflake method until you have a bunch of information about what you're doing. If it's self-help, then it's okay. So self-help, what about self-help are you trying to help with? Like, what is the problem you're trying to give a solution to? And then start listing everything out and then branch that out even further. Once you have a pretty good clear picture on what's trying to come out, like what the story, so to speak, of your nonfiction is, that's when you can start going, okay, these ones kind of clump together and these ones clump together. Now we have a pretty clear idea of like, I could do three parts, like the three parts of this story or this three parts of this book. Mm-hmm. And each one is going to have its own type of theme. Okay, now I know that I need to give them information on the beginning point of this. And then in the midsection, let them know that they're not, you know, losing track of things because it feels weird or whatever. There's always a process. Mm-hmm. So it's about trying to figure out what does that process look like for them to have the transformation you're trying to get them to. And then you start working on the outline. And that's where ChatGPT comes in. And it's so handy because you can give it everything you've done, all the information that you have kind of brain dumped onto a page. Give it that information and say, okay, look, I'm trying to create a book based on this. I want to have three sections. And these are a few of the points I know I want to hit, but can you help me flesh this outline out? And it'll go, sure, here's an example of a fleshed out outline. What do you think of this? And you could look at it and be like, oh, I didn't think of adding that. Write it down. Or you could take it as it is. Or you could tweak it and say, no, this feels too stilted. I need something that's going to excite my readers about something that maybe was unrelated and you hadn't even prompted them about or prompted ChatGPT about. And so when you have an outline, now all of a sudden it's easier to then move over to Word, to move over. I use Scrivener to write. So then I can create my outline within Scrivener and then I start writing. So it's a part of that process. Now, when it comes to getting finished and actually like accomplishing the book, that goes back to mindset, because the first thing you got to do, like when I teach manifestation, there's only three steps, right? You've got step one is you're deciding. Your decision has to come first and it's your superpower. You have to make the clear an honest decision of what you're doing. Like, why are you doing and what are you doing? So if it's writing this book, what is it for and why is it doing it and when is it going to be done? So you have to go, okay, I'm starting. It's the 22nd of April. I want it to be finished by June 1st. And I'm going to start writing it tomorrow because I've got my outline today and that was my writing for today, whatever. Okay, so that's great. If you want to do that, so how long do you want your book to be? I don't know. Well, look it up in your genre. What does your genre expectation have? If it's 60,000 words, let's say, then you could break that down into 6-week sprints.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I actually teach my authors, where it's kind of like NaNoWriMo. I don't know if you know what that is. It's National Novel Writing Month. So in November, fiction authors typically, but there are plenty of nonfiction authors who hop in. We are all with one goal. We're trying to write a book or at least 50,000 words within 1 month. And so 1,667 words every single day becomes the mission. For me, when I'm teaching authors on how to maintain their momentum with their books, it's typically a 6-week sprint. And so rather than doing 1,667 words every day, I try to give them the idea that 2,000 words a day is typically a chapter. So if you could write a chapter 5 days a week, then you're going to have roughly 10,000 words every single week, which is 60,000 words by the end of the 6 weeks. And then you have 2 days off where you can just chill and not have to put your brain into the process.
Hmm.
So it's about understanding, like, what are the steps in order for me to get there, and what's the deciding factor. So then in manifestation, step two is locking in the vibe, trusting you can do it. Of course you can do it, because you've decided, you're going to start taking action. It's going to be yours. Then the final step is really just staying open to seeing what is the inspired action step that's bringing me there. And inspired action isn't just manifestation. A lot of people think, oh, you just think and then it's yours. That's not true. You think, you have to decide, then you lock in that vibe, trusting that the right steps are going to show up, but you have to do your action, the inspired action. And you know what the inspired action is based off of, like, how you're feeling. Are you giddy about it? Are you excited? Does it make you go, this is going to be awesome? Does it make you think, well, obviously I have to do this thing. I have to write the book. So of course I'm going to sit down today and I'm going to write the book. Like, sometimes it feels like the next logical step. And sometimes it feels like this, like, lightning bolt of inspiration. Mm-hmm. But either way, you're moving in the direction of your goal and not further from it. And that's how you know you're in that aligned space. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of like sounds what I had to myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
We talked about it, but then this is for other people to learn. You know what I mean? So.
Yep. Yeah, I know you get it, because we had a big, deep conversation about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the mindset is everything. And I had to. There just became a point where I was just like, man, just put it out, bro. You're going to keep sabotaging yourself over and over. Oh, I want to change this. I want to change that. And it's just, but you also have to think about yourself. And then you also have to think about the reader.
Yep.
So I had to, like, dumb it down to an extent where I have to make sure that other people can understand this and not just me, and other people could enjoy this and not just me. And so now, after that process, when it comes to writing new books, I'm like, okay, now I got it. But then I just feel like a lot of people, I tell people all the time, it's, well, when you're working on something for the first time, you're going to have kinks. You're going to, so you have to expect that. But just thinking that you're just going to have the, I mean, you could go for a blueprint, but you still have to perform.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, because you don't know what you don't know until you go through the whole process. You have to go through it once. If I were to think that my first book was going to be the most amazing thing on the planet, boy, was I sorely mistaken. I've grown so much in 12 years. And so it was that first book that got me through the process, where I understood now I needed to understand story structure better. It was, oh, now I need to understand characterization better. Oh, I need to understand how to build a series with this now. And so it's like a learning process that helps you expand your understanding of what you're doing. But if you don't even try, if you don't even get it out there, and you just think it's going to be too hard or it's going to be too whatever, you might find that you're, like, the most stellar person at marketing a book, and you just had no idea. You could find that it's really super easy, which it is actually, to publish a book. It's not as hard as people make it sound or make it seem like. It's just finding the right readers can be a challenge if you want it to be a challenge, or it can be as easy as, like, you talking to the right people in the supermarket, and all of a sudden that one person's a book blogger and it spreads like wildfire. You just don't know what your inspired action step's going to be and how tapped into the universe you are and what's going to end up happening. We can't fully grasp all of the ways that miraculous things can happen. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I even have a new microphone, if you haven't noticed. It's like, I have to work with what I got, what I have, what I currently, I mean, of course I would want to change my background a little bit more, do whatever I got to do. But often I tell people, I'm like, you already have everything that you need. You just have to perform.
Yeah.
And it's an analysis paralysis. Well, I need to do this, or I watch something on YouTube and this and that. And I'm like, honestly, I understand that people have good intentions and want to help. But I'll just do a contrast between working with someone like you versus working through somebody else. So okay, now hearing your story, you started when you were 14, you make a full-time living writing books. And this seems like it is your passion. You have a podcast, sure. You have a business called Author Revolution. It's coming to fruition, et cetera. And then there's a guy that I'll see on TikTok that wrote two books. And he's just telling me like, you could do this, you could do that, you could do all of these different things. And I'm like, okay, so this person just learned the process and promising people these astronomical numbers that probably can't even be proven. It's just, and I tell people, when people call me and try to sell me something, I'm like, okay, send me the bank statement. I know, like, how do I know that this is real? How do I know that you've actually made this money? Now, it's not about the money, but if you're trying to sell me on the money being made, then I want to have a figure attached to it that I know is true.
Yeah.
Or you can sell me on, I've been doing this for so long. This is my passion. I know what I'm doing. And you don't even have to have as much money. It's just the fact that it's your passion that sells it to me. And I can look up your name and I'll see different books and also know that you like to read books. And say, okay, cool. I want to work with this person.
Yeah. Well, I think that proves the concept of law of attraction in a lot of ways as well. Because like because there are some people who don't care, right? There are some people who are like, oh my God, I just like that guy's vibe who has the two books and he's so enthusiastic. So I want to see what he's got to do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. There could be something that he's stumbled on that is innovative. Like he could be working on something that's innovative that other people haven't thought of yet because they are not so ingrained in the system of what they think should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of us do that, right? Especially when we've been in an industry for a while, we tend to think that, well, this is the way it's always been done. So of course, this is the way we're going to keep doing it. But if you do that, you get stuck or you get left behind. And so sometimes there is that newbie magic where they come in and they break all the things because they don't know better yet. They don't know anything else. And so I'm a little bit torn with that one. But to me, it's all about that law of attraction. Like, what type of person are you looking for that's going to help you elevate? And you're going to be looking for specific things. And when that specific thing meets all the boxes, then all of a sudden you're going to be like, okay, this is the right person. Yeah, no, this makes total sense. And so then you're going to go through the process of learning and you're going to go through the motions of whatever that person is saying or teaching. Mm-hmm. It depends on the individual. And you can learn from people, whether they are new or they've been in the industry for a long time, or whether they are just in the process of writing and you needed motivation and they said the right thing. Like, it's not always about even exchange of money. Like, sometimes it's just you were in the right place having a conversation at the right time and they said the right thing that triggered something in you.
Yeah. And to be honest, I got my advice and my inspiration from a first-time author that just gave me information for free. And I was like, oh. And next thing I wrote a book, but he was like, oh man, look, just do this and do this and do this and boom. And I was like, oh, okay. Then I did it. You know what I mean? It was just as simple as that. So you are right though. But it's like after I got the advice from him and thinking about the way other people sell, I'm just like, wow. It's like you're taking advantage of a small sliver of information that people don't have and just blowing it up.
Yeah, there are definitely people out there. I have a few people in mind in the industry who are even big names as people who are meant to be teaching authors and doing it in a way that is beneficial, but it's come to light like they were not above board.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always going to be people like that, unfortunately. And so it then goes back to trusting your instincts and trusting the guidance that if you are in a manifestation mindset, if you meditate, if you are someone who is more tuned into the universe, you're gonna get the right nudges. You're gonna be nudged towards the right people for you. And so sometimes with people who really kind of suck and prey on others, it's a lesson for us. It's still there. Everything is still working out for us. It's just that we're asking for a lesson that maybe is gonna be more bumpy than we necessarily needed.
Right. Yeah, that is true, though. You do have to have a little bit of discernment when it comes to certain things. And I've learned not to let my eyes get bigger than my wallet and not let somebody say something like, oh, well, it must be true. It's kind of just like looking around what people are saying and just like watching how. So there's a lot of things that goes to it, though. But
For sure.
I'm not going to act like everyone is a phony and everybody is just trying to take advantage of people, because that's not right. But then it's just, you definitely have to have those lenses on.
Oh, yeah. Have the critical thinking aspect of your brain triggered, because it will keep you, it'll keep you alert to, especially in the marketing world, there's always like things that they're trying to tweak, or like ways of wording things that are going to trigger your subconscious mind into doing whatever. And if you're not tuned into that, if you're not aware of that's what they're doing, it's very easy to get sucked down that path and forget about the whole like, oh, my wallet is not, it's not okay with my wallet yet. And so you have to have a little bit of both, like trust. If you're being nudged towards something, trust that you're being nudged there for a reason, because sometimes, and I've seen this with my authors a lot, like they're being nudged to learn something specific, whether it's ChatGPT or whatever, but people are telling them, no, 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 it's terrible, or it's going to be the downfall of all authors or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they're feeling really the call to do it. It's sometimes you have to trust your own internal guidance first. And it doesn't matter what other people are saying. It doesn't matter about money sometimes. What matters is, okay, if you really desire it, because the way that I teach manifestation is when you decide something, the answer is always yes. That's how you lock in that middle piece, right? The answer is yes. So if the answer is yes, then if I want to have this thing, the money will come. I will find a way to make it. I will find a way to earn it. I will find a way to pull it in. I will find a way to miraculously manifest it. I don't care. Whatever. I'm open to all the things, universe, bring it to me. Mm-hmm. And so then you trust and you take the steps knowing that you're going to be able to do it. So sometimes that could mean having a course that is a little bit of a stretch, because you're stretching yourself to remind yourself what you're worth and how much you can accomplish or do or learn, even when you think there's that little bit of fear that you can't. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit about getting over that hump, about not allowing the fear to rule everything either.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's that balance. You have to trust what your gut is telling you. And if your gut's telling you, no, this is not the right person, then trust that first.
Yeah. I've had some dire consequences of not trusting that first.
Right. Me too, unfortunately.
Yeah, I lost a lot when I was like, man, why didn't I listen to myself? But then again, it's not that like some people are bad for you or bad peer. I mean, no, it's not that those people are bad people. They're just not right for you or where you're going.
And sometimes contrast is a thing, right? So contrast breeds desires, mm-hmm. and desires lead to decisions, and decisions lead to more clarity. And so if you're in that place of, I haven't quite decided yet what I want to do, I haven't quite decided yet how I want my career to look, because I haven't had enough information to come in teaching me of how I want this career to look, then you're going to have an onboard a lot of contrast to be able to help you get clear very quickly. Because like when you know what you don't want, you know more clearly what you do want.
Right.
And so that's the whole purpose of the contrast and going through some of those teachers that maybe weren't very helpful, or learning something, or using a technique that didn't work yet, or whatever. It's because it just doesn't work for you based off of your frequency, based off of the way you want your career to work subconsciously. There's all sorts of like layers that we're trying to overcome or we're trying to work with. And so it really does require getting clear on what you want.
Yeah, being honest about what you want. And so what if someone wants like multiple different things? Do you feel like that's okay, or should they just focus mm-hmm. only on one?
Yeah, so for me, the way that I see it is like there it's both. So if you want multiple things and you believe you can have them all at the same time, it's all going to boom, to come together, and there is no problem in that. It can happen, absolutely. But when you think that, okay, well, everyone's telling me that there's a slow growth with this, this, and this, and if I spread myself too thin, that means the growth is going to slow down. Now you're onboarding that. Your subconscious mind is onboarding that. And you are working within the constraints of that belief structure. And so then you're going to be looking for the evidence of it being slow growth, right? So it's up to you to tell a different story. If you want it to be fast, if you want to defy all expectations, if you want to be one of the rebel people, you need mm-hmm. to tell yourself and your mindset that this is how it's going to work for you. And you're going to be looking instead for the proof and the evidence of it working for you, that everything gets to work in exactly what way you want it to work. And you're going to be making big, bold moves in order to have and accomplish those things. So it just depends on like the person. If you believe that you can't, then focus on one thing. Focus on one thing so hard that you know that it's going to make everything come together, and then you can work on the other things and they'll fall in line. Like find a way to feel good about how you want the flow to work, and then just believe that you can, because your beliefs are just thoughts you continue to think, but your beliefs inspire your actions as well. And so if you're not believing you can do it, if you're not believing you can accomplish these things in a certain way, even if it's what you want, even if it's like what you think you really want and desire, it won't come to you in that way, because your subconscious mind is going to keep trying to keep you safe. And so subconsciously, you'll sabotage little bits here and there just enough to keep you under the radar of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. Mm. Does that make sense? So it's like you really need to get clear on your story. And then anytime a belief that crops up and says, oh, but I can't do it, take notes, sit up straighter and be like, whoa, my brain just said that I can't have that. Why is that? And then go, but is that really true? Could it never happen? Could something surprising, miraculous not happen? Could a TikToker not pick up my book in the middle of nowhere and just all of a sudden it went viral? Or could I not bump into Stephen King in the middle of, I don't know, concert and then have a conversation with him? And next thing I know, we're best friends. Who knows? There's all sorts of ways the universe can position people, things, places, opportunities for you. But you have to be open enough to receive those opportunities.
That is true, though. I mean, because we have so much access to so many different things, so many different people. So you kind of have to be optimistic as you could possibly be.
Yeah, it's if your brain's telling stories anyway, why don't you tell stories in your favor?
Right.
Like, why are you telling stories of like why it's not going to work out for you? Reframe it. Shift those beliefs. Because what happens is like, when you believe that these things happen, when you believe these good things come, you're looking for evidence of that, just like you would be the other way around, right? And when you're looking for the evidence of it coming to you, now all of a sudden you're seeing opportunities that maybe you wouldn't have noticed before. Mm-hmm. And when you take those opportunities and follow the inspired action steps down the rabbit hole, all of a sudden you're doing things that you didn't realize you enjoyed, or of course you wanted, or they open new doorways or whatever. So it's just, we just need to be more cognizant of the stories we're telling ourselves. And I think authors are like actually in a really good place for that, because we're telling stories all the time anyway. So why not reframe our own stories?
Right. Yeah. And then I heard of one technique when it came to telling yourself stories about things that happened in the past. Is you can almost change your life when you just think about a scenario that happened in the past and then just change your perspective of it by giving a story that happened in your favor. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. Actually, my friend, Tammy Tyree, the board clinical hypnotherapist, we have a number of hypnoses that are like that, where it's talking to your inner child to be able to reframe a situation or a money dilemma or a conversation on money or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Sometimes about storytelling, because sometimes people had someone in their life that told them, oh, this is crap. Why are you doing this? And right. So they're trying to overcome the critic in their own minds, telling them that they are not good enough, or they're never going to be worthy, or people aren't going to read their stuff. And so, yeah, we do inner child work a lot. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's so powerful. It's so powerful to just reframe it, because all of a sudden now, if you do it a couple of times, for some people, it impacts them the very first time. Like it's like a light switch being turned off or on, depending on what you need it to be. But what's really interesting is that what we found, if they repeat it a couple of times, in as little as three, they are able to already start looking past the same beliefs. Like it's almost like they look back and go, I'm not even holding these same thoughts anymore. I'm not, it's not even there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I don't know. To me, there's something so powerful in being able to tap into the subconscious mind and just rework it. That's the whole reason why Tammy is a part of the programs.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually done that a few times, and it was very intense. And it was just like, you're thinking about it, you're observing what's going on. But then after you look at it from the frameworks of an actual adult, it kind of like shifts the way you think about it in a way. Because I think about my childhood trauma, now I'm just like, oh, whatever. It is what it is. Yeah. It doesn't hurt me as much as it used to, like when I would think about it. Because now I'm like, oh, well, people crazy. The people just don't have it all.
Right?
Like
sometimes
it happened to you.
Yeah. And sometimes your child brain can't process a situation in the same way your adult brain can. And so when you are a child and you have something happen to you and you don't realize that the adult who did it wasn't in a good place and it had nothing to do with you, you're onboarding it as if it's you that's the problem.
Right.
And so if you can go back to that place and you're looking at it from a, okay, I understand this person better now as an adult and what was going on in his life or her life. So I can tell myself, the child version of me, what was actually going on and that it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, let's rework all the different neural pathways. And it's so cool because that when you start to strengthen new neural pathways towards the ideas and the things that you want and away from the hurts and the things that you don't want, all of a sudden you're putting more energy, effort, and your brain just instinctively then goes towards those neural pathways because you've strengthened them, right? You've created the network that's going to expand like the tree, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're able to just more quickly shift away from it. And those ones wither off and die because you're not utilizing them anymore. And so they no longer are an issue. So when you think about it in that way, it's, if you're trying to get over something, stop feeding it, stop thinking about it, stop worrying about it, and start shifting the story and how it works. And you don't even need hypnosis if you don't want to. It literally is just being aware in that moment when you're telling yourself that story or you're remembering that thought and go, why am I doing that? Because law of attraction is bringing more of that memory to me. And so the longer I think about it, the more I'm going to dwell in it, the more I'm going to feel yucky about it, the more all of these things are working against what I really want to feel like. And so then it's, let's shift something else. What if it didn't happen like that instead? What if? And so play that what if game. What if instead of feeling that way, it was the perfect situation? Or what if instead I could do XYZ and still overcome and kind of be like, F you, I made it anyway. Or whatever story you got to tell yourself to feel better. But it's all about just reframing and pushing through that kind of dense energy and having a different story.
Yeah. And then it's a different story and then a different perspective as well. So that's a lot of things. I'm like, man, what if you just change your perspective on what happened or what was going on at the time, et cetera. And then also understanding, being like, man, that person was dealing with a lot and they probably just didn't know how to manage it. And then they just blew up and this scenario happened. So I come from with a mind frame where it's like human beings are flawed. Nobody's bigger than the universe and how humans function and mental illness and things of this sort. So it's just, I give people grace because I'm like, you don't even know what you're going through at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're
so many of us don't.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. That's a muscle too. Like being conscious, it's a muscle. You have to be willing to see your own BS when it crops up. And sometimes that really is just, like, the only way to get to that point is being willing to look for it, or being like, that's the first step, like being willing to see where your thoughts are not helping you, where your actions are not helping you. And then from that point, when you're willing to do it, now you're seeing it. Okay. So now if you're seeing it, are you willing to change it?
Right.
Are you willing to, if nothing else, just change the thought of it? So it really is, it's like a stepping stone all the way towards actual true transformation, but it all starts in the mind.
Yeah. And if people aren't willing to change it, that's when I'm like, hey, man,
right?
I'll let you know, but I gave you a chance. At least I won't have any guilt at the end of the day. But I gave you a chance.
Yeah. And that's law of attraction again, because now you guys, you're not vibing. It's not the right fit. So those people fall away. And that happens to us a lot. Like, we go through life and we're like, why did my best friend who was in kindergarten through ninth grade with all of a sudden no longer be my best friend? Like, how did that happen? It's because you evolved into different people and your energies no longer were in alignment with each other. And so instead, she found someone else, he found someone else, and you did too. And so now all of a sudden you have new best friends and new experiences, new relationships, new all of the things. And so that's happening all this time. And we're just trying to stay in alignment with that. And so when someone's not on the right vibe, well, that's just the opportunity to go like, nope, this is not a scenario that I want to go down, and just trust that that's okay, because that's where you're at.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had to do that too. I'm like, man, I'm losing a lot of friends. And then I would think about it. I was like, why would they even want to hang out with you? You don't drink, you don't watch sports, you don't do all kind of things that they do. So why would they call you to come hang out with them?
Yeah. And then you're like, why would I want to go hang out with them either? Because I like them. thing. These are way cooler. So let's find people who like these things too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, and then I started to learn that it's not the fact that they're bad or I'm better or they're better and I'm bad or better or worse or whatever. Yeah. It's just that it just is. It is what it is. You took your interest serious. They took their interest serious. They're both different. And then you just got to find your tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. When you think about it, I mean, there's so many different realities happening all around us because there are the jocks. There are the people who are intellectual. There are the people who like manifestation. There are people who don't like manifestation. Mm-hmm. There are the Christians, and then there are the Buddhists. And then there's we have little micro realities happening all the time.
Yeah.
And so in order to balance it all out, it's we have to have some sort of way to be able to connect with the people who get us. And I think that's probably why human beings are structured the way we are, where we are so social that we seek out actively the people who are either going to help us learn the thing we need to learn. So sometimes it's a painful lesson, mm-hmm. But there's still like some sort of, there's still a vibrational or frequency connection where it's like that person has something to offer and you're trying to learn the thing. And so that's why these like unfortunate situations happen. But usually it's because you are of the same mindset. You're of the same thing. Like you're trying to do the same thing together. And that's how we sort ourselves.
Right. Yeah. And I figured that too. And I remember some people telling me like, you can't only talk to people because of this or because of that. And I'm like, no, like I'm really, really interested in this. And so if you're not about it, I don't know what else to talk about. I don't know what else to do. But then I noticed that I've had friends based off of whatever activities that I like to do, like an author friend mm-hmm. or workout friend or parents, a similar parent friend. Once you have all of these different, I have different personalities depending on who I'm with and where I go and what I'm doing at the moment anyway.
Right.
It's just like sometimes it's, okay, I have these people for this, or this music for this, or this music for that. And it's just, I really can't be defined. It's just like whatever resonates with me at the moment.
Right. And I think that's how all of us are. It's just that we don't recognize it enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's where people kind of get lost at. It's okay, I'm a manifestor, so I have to burn candles. I have to do this. I have to do all of these different things. And I'm just like, nah.
You're a manifestor anyway. Did you know that? Yeah. I teach manifestation. Right. Like one of the biggest, I use this all the time. So if anyone from my audience listens, they're going to be like, oh, here she goes again. Like manifestation is literally as simple as, oh, I want spaghetti for dinner tonight. That's what I want tonight is spaghetti, right? You go to the cupboard. And you get all the ingredients out for spaghetti, except you realize you don't have spaghetti noodles.
Right.
And you're like, dang, I really locked in this idea. I wanted spaghetti. Mm. Well, that's like our equivalent of resistance, right? When we're having limiting beliefs or we're having doubts or we're having whatever. So now you have the option. Do you go to the store and get spaghetti noodles? Do you use the penne you have in the cupboard instead and have sort of spaghetti? Mm. Do you go to a grocery store or go to a restaurant and have them make you spaghetti? Or do you just give up on spaghetti altogether and have tacos? What are your options here? But if you really locked in that vibe of, no, I'm having spaghetti, it's going to be either the grocery store, it's going to be going to the restaurant. It's going to be one of those two things. Even the penne won't even inspire you because you're like, no, I really wanted to spoon those noodles around my fork. That's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to you then to trust that, okay, you either get in your car and you go down to the grocery store, you get in your car and you go to the restaurant that has the best stuff. And that's the inspired action part of it. It's like the next logical step is to go do the thing that's going to get you your spaghetti. It could have been making it for yourself, mm-hmm. but if you didn't want to do that, you have other options. So you're manifesting these things all the time, because as soon as you have a decision of something you want and you start working toward it and going after it, you're just you're doing it naturally. That's what we do. That's how we are. It's just that when you want to try to do it intentionally, when you're trying to work on something, like say an author career or having more money or being able to finish that book or all the things, and you want to be intentional and thoughtful about it, now that's where the steps are like coming in. That's where understanding how it works and the components of it comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
But you're always doing it. Even if you don't understand you're doing it, you're doing it.
Yeah, that is true. And sometimes it doesn't have to be a car. It could just be like, I want to drink some water.
Right. Yeah. It could be like, I need some coffee. Go figure out how to pour yourself a cup of coffee or make some coffee. Or literally, you're manifesting it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh, what was the software you said that you, is it called Scrivener?
Scrivener. Yep.
Scrivener.
Yep. Scrivener.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it. Got it. Okay. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. It's by a company called Literature and Latte. And mm-hmm. so Scapel is the sister program that I was talking about too, when I was talking about mind mapping. So if you're trying to mind map and you need a, you like to do it digitally, Scapel is a great program that does it. Mm-hmm. Also by Literature and Latte.
Oh, cool. Cool. Well, all right. I'm going to check that out. Thank you for that.
You bet. You bet. Yeah. I've been using both of those for a very long time. But it's so funny because there are other programs that come out. I'm someone who likes to test things as they come out. Mm-hmm. And if it works better, I'll swap. But if it doesn't work better, I tend to just stay in my lane then. So, but I like to experiment because to me, if you're doing the same thing you've always done and you're not growing, it's like, why bother? That's kind of my mindset. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always something coming out that's that try some one up.
Yeah.
Anything that you're doing. And that's
World Anvil is another great program.
You said what?
World Anvil is also a great one, especially for people who like to build big worlds. If you're a fantasy author or someone like that who wants to like keep track of characters and keep track of plots across books or whatever, World Anvil is really great. It's just but it's more virtual. It's all like online. It's not a program that you would download onto your computer, but it's super cool. And they kind of gamify it a little bit too, which makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also so many programs, so many ways to be able to write.
Oh, solid. Solid. Yeah. Chris, this has been like a great conversation. I actually learned a lot. And I'm older. So now I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to look some of this stuff. Yeah. But it's just crazy how like you have to, well, not that you have to know, but just like knowing these things give you such a greater advantage to accomplish whatever you want.
Yeah, because it's all about that awareness factor. Once you're aware of something, now you can make a decision, an informed decision on, do I continue to do things this way or do I shift and do it differently? Mm-hmm. And that goes with your mindset. It goes with how you're handling your career. It goes with whether or not you want to keep doing this thing, whatever it is, or stay in a relationship. Like all, it works on so many things, so many levels. And when we can be just aware of ourselves a little bit more, we can be better people, like better at everything.
Mm-hmm. Great. Amazing. Amazing. And so where can people find you?
Yeah. So if they want to check out my books, it's CarissaAndrews.com. They can find all three of my pen names on that site. Mm-hmm. So I write urban fantasy as Carissa Andrews. I write rom-com as Carissa Knight. So like the Knights of Templar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I write nonfiction under Carissa L. Andrews, but everything can be found on CarissaAndrews.com. There are two A's in the middle next to each other, butting up together. So it's Carissa Andrews. And then the other, with they're looking for author help, it's authorrevolution.org. Also two R's in the middle, go figure. So it's authorrevolution.org. And everything can be found there, from courses to like what I do to podcast and information, all the things.
Great, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you sharing your wisdom and all of the knowledge that you've accumulated over the years for people that are aspiring to be authors, as well as someone like myself. So I want to thank you for that. Because I know, you know, how it is when you have a course or when you have something that you're selling. So I was like, I don't want to give away too much. But I feel like you gave away enough that could possibly help someone on their journey. But at the end of the day, they still may need your help. So,
yeah. Well, for me, it's if I'm the right fit, you know where to find me. And if not, I have 240-ish podcast episodes out right now. Feel free to learn from me all you want.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing. So, again, thank you so much. Looking forward to staying connected.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks definitely. For having me. It's been so much fun, Sherman. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
She hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantsgrind.com.